relatively full day, so I think we should start with our meeting. The agenda, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, has been distributed. We're really going to get a briefing from the AG, followed by the department talking on the report progress on incidents of assault and unrest in our facilities. And then we've got a bit of committee business. And of course, I'm sure everybody's aware that our program has been altered by virtue of EBCs and plenaries. So there's two dates that have been affected, and I'm sure it hasn't communicated, but we will communicate that. And and that will be our agenda for this morning. Just to welcome the AG and for the AG's office. On an annual basis, they normally brief chairs of committees on their findings or their observations of the department's threat plan, alignment to the annual performance plan, and flag whatever they think should be brought to the attention of the chairperson. This year I thought it would be important that they shared it with all of us after they shared it with me last month or a few weeks ago. And really at the end of the process, hopefully we'd be able to use the strategic plan, the annual performance plan, to check the in-year monitoring of the department. That's the intention in the main. And we thought it was useful enough for the AG's office just to share that information with us. It's really information sharing more than anything else, but we'll allow for questions if there are. And then we'll move directly on to the business of incidents in correctional services. Welcome to our colleagues in from DCS. We will see you as soon as we finish with the AG, but you're more than welcome to sit in the AG's report. Over to you, Mr.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. We've got two presentations. The first one is on the preparation and audit of predetermined objectives, and then the other one is on the dashboard, the report, which I believe that the members have got copies of. The second one, depending on the time, will be guided by the Chair whether we need to go through that one or not. But I think the main one for today is the first one, the one on the predetermined objectives. The purpose of this presentation is to just take the committee through the process of predetermined reporting and audit of predetermined objectives, which is a heavy new area and an area that is not very well understood at this point in time, and which needs maybe further clarity for everyone to understand what this is all about. This is more about the service delivery reporting, this reporting of predetermined objectives. We're going to take the committee through what we look for when we audit this information, and also just re-highlight as to how this information should be prepared by the department, which is more an area for National Treasury, actually, you know, which is the one that is tasked with reporting on the determined objectives. If you look at this slide, just take us through the topic for discussion. We look at the background, we look at the legislative requirements, we look at the audit strategic approach, we look at the audit outcomes for specifically year 2011-12 on the predetermined objectives and the way forward. This slide just gives us a brief overview of the type of audits that our office undertakes, that is the Office of the Auditor General. We look at the financial statements, we audit financial statements, we audit also the report on predetermined objectives. We also audit compliance with laws and regulations. That is what is called a regulatory audit. That is the main audit that we undertake as the Office of the Auditor General. We also have discretionary audits. Discretionary audits include, for example, the performance audits, like, for example, the audit that we undertook on infrastructure, the audit that we took on the use of consultants. That is done by our specialized department, but that is called performance audit department, that looks at those kinds of audits. But typically, we every year we conduct the regulatory audits, which looks at these three areas. The area that we're looking at in this presentation is this one, reports on predetermined objectives, which forms part also of the audit report that we issue every year after we complete our audit. If we talk about clean audits, which we always talk about, which all the audits, the departments and entities are aiming for in the year 2014, that is the clean audits. We are talking about an audit that is unqualified as far as financial statements are concerned, that is unqualified, that has no findings on predetermined objectives, and also that has no findings on compliance laws and regulations. That is what is meant by what is referred to as a clean audit, which only a few departments have been able to achieve at this point in time. Unfortunately, correctional services is still some way before they get to that point in time. This definition of the audit on predetermined objectives is an audit of reported actual performance against predetermined objectives, indicators and targets as contained in the annual performance report. This is an integral part of the annual regulatory audit process, and when we look at the audit of predetermined objectives, we audit these three areas. We look at compliance with laws and regulations, we look at usefulness of performance reporting, we also look at the reliability of performance reporting. If you look at the legislative requirements, why do we audit the information on predetermined objectives? It comes from Section 21C and 281C of our Act, that is the Public Audit Act, which says that an audit report must reflect an opinion or conclusion relating to the performance of the auditee against predetermined objectives. So we are required, in terms of our Public Audit Act, to do this audit of predetermined objectives. If you look at the legislative requirements for the reporting of this information, it comes from the Public Finance Management Act, it comes from Treasury regulations, it comes from Public Service regulations, it comes from guidelines and function notes, practice notes, etc., issued by National Treasury. And the National Treasury has also issued the framework for managing program performance information and the framework for strategic and annual performance plans, which are the two most important documents which prescribe how this information should be reported. These documents are available also on the National Treasury website, and I believe that the members have also got copies of some of this framework, which is the National Treasury format as to how this information should be reported and presented. If you look at our approach, our audit approach, we started looking at auditing pre-assessment objectives in 2004-05 year, and we adopted a phased-in approach because this was a new area to audit. In the years 2004 to 2005 to 2008-09, we incrementally increased our audit scope of this information to make sure that in the end we comply with the Act and audit all the information, the report on predetermined objectives. In that approach, we looked at actual audit findings, reported in the management and audit reports. We looked at, we just issued an opinion, there was no opinion, and there was written interaction with stakeholders that is responsible for the preparation and the management of performance and the performance information, which includes National Treasury, Presidency, and BSA, who are the main entities that are charged with how this performance information report should be managed, and performance as such should be managed. And we provided inputs, that is our office of the Auditor General, provided inputs also to the drafting of national treasury framework, which guides how this information should be reported. So we did participate in the formulation of the whole process. From year 2009-10 to 2012-13 up to now, we have now completed the phase in approach, and we are actually auditing the information to the extent necessary to express an audit opinion. But we still don't express an audit opinion as a separate opinion in the audit report. We express the opinion in the management report on the reporting of performance information. And in the audit report, we only include audit findings, which is not of the opinion. If you look at the audit report, for example, you'll see that we do mention some findings on the usefulness and also on the reliability of information, but it do not give an opinion. That was a strategic decision at the moment to allow the department to improve their reporting on the information before we can actually issue an opinion. There was a study that was undertaken by our office last year to determine the readiness of the department, and it was found that they are still not ready. So that's why even up to now we are still not issuing that opinion on the reporting of the determined objectives in the audit report. This gives us just a feature on how the whole planning, budgeting and reporting cycle works, and how and whereabouts this information comes the one that you audit and this the audit of predetermined objectives. It all starts with Parliament, provincial legislature and municipal council, who are the policy setters. They determine the policy to be followed in February, you know, by all governments. They identify the desired impact, and then the governments will start preparing the strategic planning, which comes from the inputs that are given by those oversight bodies. This strategic planning specifies performance indicators that are going to indicate how the performance is to be measured. And they design operational planning and budget, which sets the targets to be met each year or periodically, and also allocate the resources to be used in implementing those plans. And then the implementation and in-year reporting every quarter. There is quarterly reporting by the department. They come to the committee. They also report to the National Treasury on their implementation of this, of their plans. And then at the end of the year, there's end-year reporting, which is reported in the annual report. In the annual report, you see that there is now the report also on the determined objectives, which is prepared alongside with the financial statements. And then there is assessment to see whether what was meant to be done this year was done properly, or whether there should be some amendments for going forward. And then this cycle starts again. The strategic planning to be amended to take care of the other decisions that need to be taken care of, and also the annual report. Under them, just a brief overview of the approach of the government in this planning process. It all starts with the outcome, which is what we wish to achieve. It is what the government wishes to achieve, which has to be implemented, which has to be planned for and implemented by all the departments. Then you have the output, what we produce or deliver, what can be seen to be delivered by the departments. For example, if you talk about housing, you know, how many houses are to be built in that year. And then you have the activities, what we do, what must be done by the department, which is now included in that performance plan for the year. And then you have the input, that is what we use to do work, what department, what resources the department needs to be able to implement the plan. By way of example, if you take the health department, for example, the ultimate outcome might be that we wouldn't have a healthy community. And then the immediate outcome would be we need to see healthy habits being practiced. And also the immediate outcome would be the clinic and services that are built are being used. That is the awareness, utilization, and unoffending. And then the output that we're going to see physically is that the clinics are being built, staffed, decreed. That is the output. That is just a way of example, the picking apart this whole planning process. This time, the government has got 12 outcomes that it has set itself as being the main outcome that it wants to achieve during this planning cycle, this 5-year planning cycle, which includes improved quality of basic education, a long and healthy life for all South Africans, all people in South Africa are and feel safe, etc. All these 12 outcomes is what the government at the moment has set itself as the main outcome that it wants to achieve during this 5-year period. There are two planning frameworks that have been designed by National Treasury. Because in terms of the government-wide monitoring and evaluation framework, National Treasury is responsible for managing performance information, and the following frameworks have been developed to assist in managing that information. You have the framework for managing program performance information, FMCPI, which was issued by National Treasury in 2007 May. This outlines key concepts in the design and implementation of management systems to define, collect, report and use performance information in the public sector, and then also to clarify definitions, standards for performance information in support of regular audits. That is the first framework. The other framework that we said is the new framework on strategic plans and annual performance plans, which was offered using international best practices, which was copied from countries like New Zealand, Canada, United Kingdom, United States, and United States of America. This was issued to national departments in September 2010 and was issued to provincial departments in May 2009. This guide on what should be in the strategic plan and also what should be in the annual performance plan, the plans that we have looked at, should be in line with what this framework prescribes. Taking other existing policy plans and the budget into consideration, the FMCPI and the planning framework should be used in conjunction with each other when preparing planning documents, especially for performance information. So these are the two most important documents you should look at that are prescribed by National Treasury for you to be able to assess this annual performance plan that the department brings you and also the strategic plan, because this now sets out how those documents should be prepared. This just gives a teaser of how the planning and how the different documents that are prepared work together. You have this 5-year election mandate, which the current period starts in 2009 and will end next year in 2014, during which there is the 5-year strategic plan that has been prepared for 5 years. And then you have the annual performance plan and budget. The budgets which apply now to each and every year. So these annual performance plans must fit into this 5-year strategic plan. And then you have in-year reporting, monthly financial reports, and quarterly performance reports. So every quarter, the department must report now this annual performance plan to say what has been achieved in that 3-month period versus what they said themselves have to achieve at the beginning of the year. And this is one area that the committee can also exercise oversight by looking at what is being reported versus what was planned in the first place in terms of the annual performance plan, which must also be in line with this strategic plan. And then end of the year, you have the annual report where the department will now report on the predetermined objectives, and where we also, as the Auditor General, we're going to give an opinion on the presentation and reporting of this performance information in the annual report. Another picture that shows how the strategic plan and the annual performance plan are developed You have the medium term strategic framework, national plans and planning frameworks, sectoral strategies and other plans that go into the provincial growth and development strategy. This all comes to the strategic plan. And also you have the President's State of the Nation address every year that is given, which is the program of action for that year. The Premier State of the Provinces address for each province, which must also be in line with what was reported by the President in the President's State of the Nation address. That will give rise to the annual performance plan, which must go also from what is in the strategic plan, which must always be in line with what is in the strategic plan. This is how basically the whole thing must fit together. Now back to where we, how we audit information. When we audit this information on determined objectives, these are the main criteria that we look at. We look at compliance with regulatory requirements, we look at the usefulness of information, and we look at the reliability of information. Compliance with regulatory requirements includes looking at the existence and the timeliness of reporting. Usefulness, we look at the presentation of the information, which takes into account measurability, relevance, consistency, and we also look at the reliability of information, which takes into account the validity, accuracy, and completeness of the information. These will be in line with what was set out in this framework that was prepared by the, that was developed by National Treasury. And that is where all these sub-criteria come from. Our audit approach is that firstly we understand and test the design and implementation of the performance management system, sources and relevant controls. We look at the measurability, relevance, presentation and consistency of planned and reported performance information. We conclude on the usefulness of the report on predefined objectives, and then we check the reported performance information to relevant source documents to verify the validity, accuracy and completeness of reported performance information, and then we conclude on the reliability of the performance of the reported performance for selected programs and objectives. So in other words, we test what is reported against the framework that is given by that was designed by the National Treasury. But now we're looking at the actual performance, you know, because firstly you have the plan, which must also comply with the framework. And as the year goes by, then you have the actual performance, which must also be reported in line with the framework. So that is what we look at when we audit, to determine if the information has been prepared in accordance with the framework, and to determine whether this information is properly supported by the documentation that is actually happened, what is being reported. The audit conclusion will then be prepared and at the end of the audit and included in the management report for all departments, constitutional institutions, trading entities, public entities, parliament and provincial legislature. That is for all entities of government. This information must be prepared and audited. The auditor's report, if you look at the audit report, for example, in the annual report, you see that it has these different sections when it comes to predetermined objectives. Firstly, it will say something about usefulness of information, which is the audit findings focusing on consistency, relevance, measurability, and presentation of reported performance information. It will say something about reliability of information, which will talk about audit findings, and focus on validity, accuracy, and completeness of reported performance information, and it will also refer to compliance reports and regulations, which will report non-compliance matters in relation to the performance management and reporting processes, reporting on whether the report complies with the applicable legislation. The typical audit outcome in the year 2011-12, for example, were on performance targets being not specific, performance targets being not measurable, performance indicators not well defined, that is not consistent, and reported information being not verifiable. That were the typical findings. And the root causes were identified as monitoring controls to ensure adequate oversight over performance information being not sufficient. The recommendations for improvement are in the area, for example, of leadership. Leadership needs to exercise oversight responsibility regarding financial and performance reporting and compliance-related internal controls. Action plans to address internal control deficiencies should be specific, time-bound, and progress should be monitored. Training and development of relevant performance management staff. This is our recommendation. On the performance management system, the department should develop and implement standard operating procedures. Management should ensure clear definitions and technical standards for indicators and targets. Supporting documentation should be in place. Ensure adherence to the framework as set up by National Treasury. Clearly defined roles and responsibilities. Individual performance contracts should be aligned to organizational objectives. And there should be continuous monitoring and reporting of performance. And performance. On governance, the audit committee. When you talk about governance, you normally look at audit committee, internal audit, and also the risk management. Audit committee should report on the accessibility of the quarterly report submitted to National Treasury, and should also ensure that internal audit provides assurance on a quarterly basis and monitors implementation of the action plan. This does not always happen with the departments. The audit committees and the internal audit do not always look at these reports before they are submitted to National Treasury, and also before they are submitted to this committee, which is what they should be doing. Internal audit should monitor the reporting against determined objectives on a regular basis. Reporting on determined objectives should be included in risk management strategy and practices. Those are the three areas of governance that should look at this reporting before the report comes to the committee. And thank you. That concludes our brief overview of this presentation.
So you said there was a second on audit sector?
The second presentation is on the dashboard, which is the key controls that we discuss always with the department and also with the minister and also with the chair of the committee. The chair asked us to present a message to the committee. So we've distributed the copy, but I'm not sure if you want us to present that now or...
As long as you can do that in 10, 15 minutes maximum, it's fine.
Ask Sully to take us through that one.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, and honorable members, and everyone in the room. I think my presentation will be on the dashboard, like Musa has mentioned. Basically, I will first start to take you through what we mean about the dashboard. Basically, on a quarterly basis, we actually meet with the accounting officers to take them through our high-level overview of their systems of internal control. Basically, it's actually to help them to identify issues far much in advance, rather than to be surprised by our annual audit report. So on a quarterly basis, we give them sort of highlights as to how far are they in terms of achieving the clean administration. So the dashboard is basically divided into three key drivers, of which is, I think, three key drivers of internal control. Basically, what we mean about these three key drivers of internal control, we say now if ever the department or the organization can manage these key drivers of internal control, then they'll be able to achieve the clean administration Musa was talking about in the earlier. And then those key drivers, the first one is leadership. So here we say now if leadership is exercising control, effectively. So now that will actually ensure that the department or the organization achieve its objectives. And then secondly, we're talking about financial and performance management. So now if this key driver of internal control is well managed, then administration will be achieved by the department. The last one, we talk about governance. If ever governance structures perform their functions effectively, then the department or the organization will be able to achieve clean administration. So now what we do on a quarterly basis, we go through, we've got a checklist that we go through it. The checklist actually indicates the components of these key drivers of internal control, and then we check if that information under leadership, financial management and governance is there. Firstly, we check under leadership, we check whether there is a leadership provide effective leadership, provide effective leadership based on the culture of honesty, ethical business practices and good governance, protecting and enhancing the best interest of the entity. Basically, we say here, if leadership is providing the culture of honesty within the organization, is going to be able to make sure that the department achieve clean administration. Firstly, we check issues like your formal code of ethics. We check if there is a formal code of ethics, and also there is a formal code of conduct that is actually communicated to everyone within the organization, so that people can be aware of what ethical principles should be embraced in order to run the department in a best way. So here we've got this is a third quarter assessment. That is from October last year up until December. It's a third quarter evaluation or assessment. So now what we check under leadership, especially as far as the culture of honesty in the Department of Correctional Services is concerned, we have our evaluation proves that there is a formal code of ethics, but now we see now it's not enough. We can have a formal code of ethics and formal code of conduct, but now if it's not communicated to all staff members, and staff members don't understand what is actually required of them, so we'll continue to experience issues of unethical behavior. So then our assessment in the third quarter for the Department of Correctional Services, we picked up that even though the code exists, but it does not appear from our side that it is well communicated. Staff members have been trained about what is this code required from them. That was evidenced by a list of high fraud cases that we actually picked up. I think the opening cases last year, first quarter, was about 170 cases. And then in the third quarter, it was plus minus 168 cases. So if you can check the movement from 170 to 168 cases, there is a very slow movement. Okay, one of the reasons they mentioned the department, they said, okay, some of these cases, they are moving very slow because of the lack of, or rather the shortage of the presiding officers. So now, as a recommendation, we said now they should train their key management personnel to be the presiding officer so that the cases can run a little bit faster. Because of that is the hindrance. That's what is actually impeding them from actually achieving this, achieving in this area. So now we've got three phases that we give them. We've got a green phase. A green phase meaning that in this area of internal control, management should just maintain the status quo or rather improve. Meaning there's nothing more to be done, but it's for them it's just to maintain the status quo or rather improve. And then we've got what is it, an amber phase. An amber phase basically means that the department is doing something. There is control that is in place, but we are not fully happy about the operational effectiveness of that particular control. And then the red phase says that basically management should just stop and then intervene in that area of a weakness in the system of the internal control. So now if ever you can see it at your extreme right, the assessment is based, like Musa mentioned earlier, when we audit the financial side, We audit the performance side and the compliance side. So our assessment is based on those three areas. In this case, that MBAF is there under financial. We say now under leadership, the provision of effective leadership, for financial assessment, we've got an MBAF. We say there is something that is happening, but the operational effectiveness of what is happening is not fully convincing us as auditors to actually want a green face. So that happens in all the areas, that the financial performance and compliance, where we check the issues of your ethical codes, whether it is communicated, and all those things. Okay, under 1B, we also check that whether there was an oversight responsibility that was exercised regarding financial performance reporting and compliance and related internal controls. Here we check issues like whether key staff members were available throughout the audit. Remember, they need to engage with Auditor General on a regular basis so that if ever there are audit issues that need immediate management attention, we can actually bring them in advance and they can act upon far much in advance. So the first issue there we checked the availability of staff members for those meetings. So the assessment is MBA, meaning they do meet with us, but in some of the meetings we actually struggle to get everybody who is supposed to be available for those meetings for us to brief them as to what are the areas, policy areas that we think that management should actually focus attention to. Another area we check on issues like the performance objectives, indicators and targets that are approved by the relevant executing authority. There we realize that they do actually approve the preference objectives at the beginning of the financial year, and everything there is actually going smooth. But now, the bottom line, what gives the final assessment of MBA phase is that those key officials are not available for us to engage promptly. Okay, the next area is 1C. Under 1C, we check issues like the implementation of effective HR management system to ensure that adequate and sufficient field resources are in place and that performance is monitored. So now our assessment in the third quarter, we check issues like the vacancy within the department. So we have picked up that there were key SMS positions that we have vacant, some of them for more than 6 months. And then at the end of the third quarter, they're not yet filled. So now, for us, we feel like the department has filled some, but the ones that we picked up, they also have to exercise or rather implement measures to make sure that they are also filled. And then another area is on the human resource policy. That they should really help to ensure that only skilled and competent staff members are recruited. In this area, we have picked up that the department do have a recruitment strategy. But now, at the end of the third quarter, it was still at the draft stage. So obviously, for the year under review, it won't actually help the department because of it's still under the draft stage. So that's why overall we say now, give the department a number phase. They are doing something, but it's not fully implemented by the end of the third quarter. Okay, the next area is 1D. Under 1D, we have focused on the issue of establishment and communication of policies and procedures to enable and support understanding and execution of internal control objectives, processes, and responsibilities. Here we check issues like the documented policies and procedures, whether they are in place to guide operations of the entity to comply with the relevant legislation and regulation, e.g. like PFMA, your supply chain, etc. And also the processes, whether the processes are in place to prevent and detect unauthorized, irregular, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So now in this area, we basically picked up that the The document showing compliance with policies and procedures for the period up to December 2012, we requested that document, then we couldn't receive from the department. So they couldn't convince us that they do actually have a compliance checklist to make sure that we comply with all the laws and regulations. And then also, the list of items that were identified by management for irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, if you can remember very well, last year we actually reported on fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So as a matter of non-compliance, the department will catch some of the irregular expenditure, but we expected them to actually develop some action plans to how are they going to deal with the issues of reported irregular fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So we couldn't satisfy ourselves as to the measures that were in place to ensure that they deal with the issues that we had in mind. Also, there were queries on the internal control deficiency and cases on the policies that were in a draft stage, as well as non-compliance with the same, were noted during the previous year audit. So the next one is on 1E. In 1E, we talk about the development and monitoring the implementation of action plans to address internal control deficiency. So on an annual basis, the department, when we issue our final audit report or the management report, they develop an action plan to address reported audit issues, as well as resolution as to how are you going to make sure that the reported items are resolved by year end. So now in this area, we have picked up that the department has addressed action plans, but by the end of the third quarter, there were some other areas where the department was still actually falling behind. So that's why we're still having an amber phase. So next one is OnePass. Here we're talking about the establishment of IT governance framework that supports and enables the business, delivers value and improves performance. Here we are basically checking whether there is an established IT governance framework by the department. So at the end of the third quarter, we have picked up that there were means that were actually put forward by the department to make sure that there is proper IT governance framework. But now, at the end of the third quarter, the IT governance framework was not fully designed, meaning it was still in progress. So, and most of the interventions and sub-activities for the establishment of the implementation of the IT governance framework, they were basically at virtually complete stage. So it was the invitation that all activities will be actioned by the end of February, meaning by the end of February, the IT governance framework will be fully functional and everything will be okay. But now we gave them an amber phase, indicating that they are doing something, but it's not fully completed. Okay, the next area on the key driver of internal control is on the financial and performance management. Okay, in this area, we have looked on we've looked at issues like your filing system. We check whether the department has proper filing system to make sure that financial information is readily available as and when required. Performance information is readily available as and when required, and also compliance information is also readily available as and when required. We talk about issues of monthly reconciliations that should be performed by the department. We also check issues like whether there is a designated area where a staff member is responsible for ensuring that information is properly kept. So financial information, yes, we have found that there is a proper filing system and the information was sent to us, but not all the information that we requested from the department actually came forward. But now our main worry, that is the right phase, is information on predefined objectives. Because of now we've been going through all the regions, and most regions couldn't actually give us information that we requested for us to be able to do our review on the report of performance objectives. So now that's where we say management should basically focus attention and actually do something to make things look better by the end of the financial year. Okay? So that was all about 1 to 2A. 2B, we checked the implementation of controls over the daily and monthly processing and reconciling of transactions. Here we request things like your adjusting journals, whether those journals are being completed properly. We checked like issues like a suspense account, whether the suspense account is paid, is actually paid famously as required by the laws and regulations. And also the use of consultants, whether it's monitored to ensure that there is proper transfer of skills. So then here, under 2B, we've realized that the department is doing something, but now, during the time of our review, there were some other reconciliations that were not finalized by the department, and also suspense account items that were not fully cleared by the department. So that's why we still have your amber phase. Okay, the next section is the 2C. Okay, under 2C, under 2C, we check the preparation of regular, accurate, and complete financial and performance report that is supported and evidenced by the reliable information. Here we check whether the staff members understand the applicable financial reporting framework and performance information report requirements. And then whether there is accurate monthly and quarterly financial statement reporting. And whether information is reliable and complete. So under financial information, yes, the department is doing something, although during the time of review, not everything was done up to our satisfaction as auditors. But our greatest worry was on the performance information. We've realized that there is a lot of mistake on the information that we receive to review for performance information, whereby some of the reported performance information was not accurately reported, not consistently reported by all the region. So that's why we also say management should make sure that maybe they provide training on the origin of performance information, or that there is an intense monitoring and review of the reporting process, especially in the regional offices. Because of now, according to our observation, that's where most of skills and capacity is needed as far as the reporting of performance objectives. Okay, the next area is on the review and monitoring of compliance with applicable laws and regulations. I think it relates to what I mentioned earlier. That is 2D. The review and monitoring of compliance with laws and regulations. Here are issues like whether the entity understands which laws and regulations should actually comply with. And then also whether there is an appropriate means for monitoring compliance on a regular basis. So now, during the time of our review, we have picked up that it is no indication of how compliance with laws and regulation is monitored by the department. In the previous audit, you can remember, there were various queries relating to compliance with laws and regulation in our final audit report. But now, at the end of the third quarter, still we couldn't actually satisfy ourselves as to whether the department do have they do have a means that actually helps them to know which laws and regulations they should comply with. So that's why we still have an amber phase. The next one is the design and implementation of formal control of the IT system to ensure the reliability of the system and the availability and accuracy of and the protection of information. Here, the department, I think in the previous year, I think it was in 10-11, this area used to be radio department because of the vacancy in IT section. So I think in February last year, appointed Chito, the head of information and technology. So at least since he started, there has been some improvement within the IT section. So, but now during the time of review, not everything was actually working 100%. Okay, still experience issues like whereby the access or rather the integrity of the information is actually compromised in some instances, whereby there is no the access control is not working actually properly in all the regional offices. So we find out some authentication is done through the user ID instead of unique password. There are some few loose pockets. But now we were happy that the department is actually doing something, although it's not convincing to actually warrant a green face for us as auditors. Okay, the next area is 2E. Under 2E, we, what is 2D? Under 2D, what is 2D? Oh, governance, yeah. Governance, the implementation of appropriate risk management activities. Also, the issue of internal audit and the audit committee. Like Musa has mentioned, we all focus on three areas. That is the risk management, whether the risk management is actually assisting the organization to achieve its objectives. So what we've got here under internal, under risk management, we have picked up that the risk funding is there, but now there was no the risk management is there, but now it's not actually functioning the way it's supposed to be functioning. There are some areas that we picked up that the risk management section is not actually achieving. That's why we still have our yellow, our amber face. Okay? Other internal audit. For internal audit, we check issues whether the internal audit is fully capacitated to comply with the internal auditing standards, and then whether they are performing their duties as far as treasury regulation and PFMP is requiring them to perform. But now we have, under other areas, we have picked up that they are doing something as far as the requirements for, as far as part of, as part of their responsibilities. But now what we are not happy about, we are not happy with management. Because of now, management is best practice. Management should review whether the internal audit function is actually operating effectively. So we've picked up that that section is not actually performed by the department. That's why we're still having an end of phase. So we only have a green phase at our audit committee. For audit committee, we check whether the audit committee operating is supposed to actually operate, whether it meets as per prescription, whether they perform all the duties that are required by PFMA general regulation. So for audit committee, we were, at the end of the third quarter, we were happy. They had all those things that we expected as auditors for them to have actually performed by the end of the third quarter. So those were the three areas that we actually reviewed as auditor general. So far, as in a summary, what I can say, we are much more concerned about the area of predetermined objectives. We need to make sure that management focus attention on making sure that staff, especially at the regional level, understand, like Musa was presenting, the framework of presenting performance information, the strategic plan, the linkage between the strategic plan and the annual performance plan, and of course, coincidence in reporting, and also making sure that the information that they report to head office is actually accurate information all over. So I think those are two areas that we are much more concerned as auditors. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And to the AG Raffles. Anybody want to ask questions of clarity? I note Mr. Max. I note Mr. Self. Mr. Max.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to deal with the last document the gentleman spoke to. With regard to the column 1C, which states implement effective digital management to ensure adequate and sufficient skills and resources are in place and the performance monitored. What do you mean with adequate and sufficient skills resources? Is it not the human resources, is it the people? which been appointed. Now, if this is so, I just want to know, what did you find there? Why, which prompted you to make such a finding or recommendation? This is one. Secondly, if you move to page 4, first paragraph, the implementation of proper record keeping, if I'm correct, if my memory serves me correct, then that is exactly a repetition of your previous year as well. Correct? And then the last, in that last sentence in that same column, the ID systems. Although you mentioned that there is some progress with a new appointment made, we had a situation in ID. There were a number of consultants. What is the current situation with regard to those consultants? And overall, are you satisfied that the management of TCS provide value for money? Given the fact that the somber faces are very prevalent here, and the only green faces with regards to the oversee the internal audit committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I want to address the first presentation, if I may. And first of all, just on a technical question, I'm not entirely clear in my own mind what the difference is between a finding and an opinion. And if I could just have an explanation on that. But the more substantive question relates to the problem in any organization, that an organization will perform on what it gets measured on. Therefore, you know, the measurements become absolutely crucial, and the measurements need to speak to the core activities of the department. Now, my experience over the years with the Department of Correctional Services is firstly that the strat plan keeps changing, and secondly that the objectives keep changing, so that when you don't achieve it, or you don't achieve what you set out to achieve, instead of addressing the root causes of not achieving that, what tends to happen is that the department comes the next year with a new strat plan and new APP that redefine the objectives in a different way. What role does the Auditor General play in ensuring that every year you can compare apples with apples and plot progress towards a objective that is substantially the same? And finally, in terms of the slide that showed the interaction between oversight and planning, it's quite clear here that the oversight mechanism, in our case Parliament, is supposed to impact on the strategic planning, which it then subsequently monitors. But I mean, every year we come here and there's already a pre-printed strat plan that gets presented. The best that we can do is to make some comments on the appropriateness of those strat plans. What is Auditor General's view about how that relationship between the oversight authority and the planning process could lead to more effective governance in the department? Thank you, Sam.
I'll talk on the second presentation. I heard the presenter talking about the number of fraudulent cases that have not been dealt with by the department. He mentioned the number of 168 cases, if I'm not mistaken. And they suggested that the department should train some of the staff members to preside over those cases. Don't you think that would be making a serious mistake, because they become a referee player themselves? I would imagine that was the reason why they took the route to get outsiders to deal with these cases. What is your opinion on that? Thanks, sir.
Thank you, Chair. If I can just start with the questions referring to the first presentation, and then go on to the second presentation. I think the first one was the finding, difference between the findings and the opinion. The oral opinion is where we say that the chairs are issuing a qualified or unqualified opinion. When we actually say a report on the whole document or on the whole report to say whether it's fairly present or not fairly present. We do that for the treatment of judges, although we call it a conclusion. But at the moment, we only report that in the management report, which we discuss with management, because of the phase in approach at this point in time, we have felt that the departments are not ready to be given an opinion to say whether they're still present on text not, you know, which will appear in the audit report until that time when we decide that now we're going to report as required by the Public Audit Act. At this moment in time, we just issue findings which we also show on the audit report just for the reader to know what is happening as far as predetermined objectives are concerned, reporting from them, without saying what our opinion is on the reporting. So that is what we refer to as a finding, not giving opinion. The next question, I think, it referred to the measurement, there should be some measurement so that you can see whether the departments have achieved what they're supposed to achieve. One of the elements is that the indicators should be measurable, that is in terms of the framework. So the information must be presented in such a way that it should be easy to measure whether or not they have been able to achieve what they set themselves out to achieve. And that is one of our main findings, where we find that the indicators are very clear, are not very clear in many cases. It's not, they're subject to interpretation, which makes it difficult to measure objectively, you know, whether or not what's set up to be achieved has been achieved. And that is one of our findings at this stage. That's one of the areas that has not been very well handled at this point in time. The other one, I think, referred to the oversight being a part in the development of the strategic plan, but not having the opportunity to play that part effectively because the report comes here when it has already been sort of like, completed. The report is presented first to the executive authority, the minister, who also has to approve it, and then before it comes to this committee. But we do recognize that the committee doesn't have, maybe, or the parliament doesn't have much time or much role to play in shaping the strategic document, or in ensuring that the strategic document has been well prepared. Which is, for example, our office this year, we started trying to assist during what we called pre-auditing. For example, we looked at the other performance plan for the year 1314, which is the year that we're not auditing yet, so that you could give some input to the departments so that they can have some time to correct what they can do, so you know, some of the reporting of the areas that have not dealt with properly. It was like a pilot, this year, which has not worked out very well in some departments, including correctional services, in the sense that they were not ready or were reluctant to give the document to us in time for us to be able to give that input, because we wanted that document by the end of January so that we could give the input well before the document was finalized and presented to the executive authority and also to this committee, which is why also we still met with the chair, although it was a bit late afterwards, you know, to still give some of our input as regards that document. So I agree that area is still not very well handled at the moment, because the whole reporting should be consistent. It should all be aligned so that it's got a better chance of achieving what it's supposed to achieve. Thank you. I just ask
just before you do that, just on the last point, we won't discuss it, but I think we must discuss it, on the principle of the cell. My understanding is that the threat plan is the executive's wish to wherever they want to go to. So once Parliament meddles with that, are we not going to be guilty of breaching the separation of powers? I'm saying that's something that we must discuss. Surely we can't, as Parliament, participate in the threat plan of government and then tomorrow oversee the threat plan of government. So I just think that in your own report, AG, you guys would need to look at that, because I think we'll be sitting in danger as government if we then start to want to do what the executive is supposed to be doing. But carry on with the second part of it.
In this is somewhat misleading.
So that's why I'm saying that they must consider it, because I don't think that it is taking into account the separation of powers. It means that we must play a part in the actual planning of what the executive should be doing. I just think that we need to be more careful on that one. But let's carry on with the second part of questions, please, and time it again first, and then we'll carry on with the department.
Mr. Max question on the HR management. Basically, we are concerned with the issue, with the fact that the department should actually have an HR management system that is actually helping them to get the proper skills, especially in the area of the qualification, especially the asset management. So we have picked up that in certain areas, people with without a proper skill in asset management are used in the department. And then basically, I think that is the main reason that actually causes the department to continually conceive what is it, the qualification on assets. So we are so worried. And then second, that we are worried about the high level of vacancies, especially in the SMS, that is level, I think, 13, 14, and 15 that you reviewed. So that is SMS level, that is senior management level. So the department should actually make some means, make sure that all of those levels are actually fully fit. So those are we need to concern for from our side. On the issue of IT, our observations, I think, yes, the progress is there. You know, we have seen a difference from the previous. So now what I said now, in the previous, I think, 2 years, the dashboard under IT was actually read. Meaningly, there was no movement in the IT department. But since last year, I think in February, when they appointed the CTO, we have seen some actual movement going towards the right direction. But now, at the point of our review, there were still some like loose pockets, like as I was mentioning, a lot of things that will still need to be addressed by the IT department. But as auditors, with the list that they have done, we are actually a little bit happy. Give them an end phase to say, you guys are moving towards the right direction. You're not yet there, but it is something that you are doing, taking into account from where you come from. Oh, okay. The issue of consulting, I think they have, in the IT department, I think that's the major section where they consulted to us. But I think they have reduced the number of consultants quite substantially, and they have tried to capacitate the IT function with the internal staff members. So there is a drastic reduction in the number of consultants compared in those previous years to financial years. So then with the available staff, we see this progress. Okay. And then the value add, as far as there's a lot of your faces, I think our expectation is to have at the end of the day green faces. I think for us, we are also not happy, but we are more or less convinced that the department is trying something. But now this office has been here, I think, for the second quarter, and in the third quarter there was no movement. So to answer the question of value adding, I cannot say that the department is adding value or not, because of now. For myself as an auditor, I can say now my evaluation proves that there is something that they are trying. But it's not like convincing during the time of our review. Thank you.
Cross, there was a long question about your thought. Can you repeat the
Okay, for the issue of the fraud cases, I think we as voters we were concerned about the high number of fraud cases that actually they are very much to be resolved. Remember, we sort of recommend, but we don't say the department should do what, just recommend that if ever you can have like a pool of the presiding, not pool of the presiding officers, you know, wherever they get those presiding officers, I think it's management responsibility. So I think if we've got enough people, then the cases can be quickly dealt with. So that's our concern. Thank you.
Chair Bonner, thank you very much. We will continue to engage and use this information when we deal with the department's quarterly reports. Thanks, Musa, and to your team. Give you 2 minutes to move out if you so wish. You're free to go, and then we will get down to the business with DCA. About the progress and or final report on the Andres Reyes death, I'm not sure what the correct word is, but somewhere there, of the incident in 2013, St. Albans, having a part in 2013, then there was also an incident at St. Albans that at our last interaction, the COO made an undertaking that she'd also give us a sort of feedback. I'm hoping that she did relay that to you there here. Then there was the Durban Westboro incident of the death of an inmate. We're hoping for you to give us some sort of progress and or finalized report on that matter. And if anybody tells me correctly, Cindy, I think there was an incident in Portsmouth at some point, isn't it? Mm-hmm. All right. So we'd hope that you would touch on that and give us some sort of progress report on that. But for us, I think more than a report on what you've done, as important as it is, for us, I think it's really what is your strategy to contain and or to deal with these things. We cannot continue to have a knee-jerk reaction. Every time there's an incident somewhere, we ask you why, and we find that it's a lack of compliance, or you don't have a strategy, or you have a strategy on paper but it's not implemented, because you tell us, after you've spoken on these specifics, I think it's more important that you tell us what is it that you are doing in terms of procedure and policy. One, to be able to detect and preempt. And we say that because St. Albans, for instance, not St. Albans, but Grundel, for instance, when you reported to us, you spoke about the high levels of cell phones and stuff that were found in your management area. So what preventative measures are in your stress plan, if you have got a stress plan, is what is important to us. So, as you talk to the incidents, what is the department doing? I'm sure when we open it up to members, they will give you horror stories of what they've either picked up in the constituencies or what they hear. And surely, if we know about what's happening in the facilities, we'll be surprised if you don't know. And if you do know what's happening, what is it that you're doing about it? So that's more what we want to talk about. So, also, just to indicate that last night, I just get opportunity to talk to the National Commissioner for the benefit of our members. Again, because of Parliament planning, the department is also expected to be presenting to the NCOP on the stress plan. So they've subdivided themselves. I know the COO, I think, is leading the delegation to the NCOP. Mr. Klaas, I was informed, would lead this delegation here, and maybe the NCOP would join us later. The National Commissioner, by instruction of Cabinet, together with his six or seven other colleagues that are in the investigating team, have been told not to do anything else but to focus on the job at hand, because they were 7 days. So the Commissioner did apologize because they have been instructed to focus entirely or focus exclusively on the task at hand. So the Commissioner is not here. Mr. Olingana is in the NCOP. Mr. Clark is here. So we accepted their apologies, or we've been noted, and I'm sure there's not much we can do about it other than our own planning as this committee. But we're hoping that you are sufficiently informed to be able to deal with some of the questions that members will ask as we go along. It is 10:30, and when you are done with us, we still have a little bit of our own meeting. So we've got about an hour. I'm not sure how long is your presentation. We've got an hour at most, an hour and a half. So if you guys could do your presentation, we'll allow you to do your presentation, and then we will open it up for questions. You are aware that the committee has already adopted some of its reports, and some members will refer to those recommendations and ask why are you or not recognizing some of those recommendations. So Mr. Clark, over to you, sir. And I'm hoping people can hear. Do we need to move from members? You're fine. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe before I start, just to introduce the team I'm with. Next to me is the Chief Security Officer, who is the global teacher of what is happening nationally, community. And then I'm Regional Commissioner of Western Cape. Western Cape. Next to me is a Regional Commissioner of Western Cape, Governor of Breakfast. And then next to him is the Regional Commissioner of Free State and Northern Cape, Subhash Nomodli. Next to Subhash is the Deputy Regional Commissioner for Free State and Northern Cape, Grace Mulatelli. Also, we have other colleagues who are providing support to the team. But I think the colleagues have introduced.
Please speak into your mic so that guy can back in here.
Yeah. The colleagues I've introduced are the ones who deal with questions or any issues that have been raised. Maybe, Chairperson, let me indicate that in terms of our presentation and preparations, we did not include Durban-Westville. We were not aware that the specific questions related to Durban-Westville, the correspondence were received. As a result, in fact, last night we released the Commissioner for Cape Town to leave. So we were prepared to talk about Hornsby, Baltimore, and St. Albans. Maybe globally, you could talk about Durban-Westville in the context of what we do globally on those issues. But the specifics of the case, we might not be able to deal with that one. Our presentation is not going to be a very long one. It's going to be about 15 minutes. And then from there, we would take questions and comments. But maybe I should indicate as a start to say that given the challenges that we've had over the last few days, months, and the fact that the Department of Correctional Services as a department is not mandated by law to do intelligence gathering, that is done by other departments, NICOG has since established a trap team that is going to look at terrorism in our facilities and how to respond. So I think in the past we were operating on our own, the police had their own information on terrorism, the intelligence community had their own, but NICOG has established a team now that is going to coordinate that work, and I think they would report in their own mechanisms of reporting to Parliament on what they are doing and what kind of support they will provide to the Department of Correctional Services. because both at national level and in provinces we have advanced through the association and through the intelligence community in this regard, because we thought that it was important for us to be able to analyze this situation and respond on time. So I thought I should just indicate that as a way of introduction. Our presentation is divided into the introduction. We will speak briefly about the Groenband incident, the Baltimore incident, and the bans, and then we'll do concluding remarks. So the purpose of this presentation is to present the incidents that occurred at the mentioned centers in relation to the security challenges they pose. The incident report shall address the summary of the incident itself, the key drivers of the incident, or what is it that we now view causes this incident and the interventions taken to date. This presentation doesn't seek to preempt investigations and subsequent findings and recommendations on each case. And as a general principle, it must be noted that gang activities are a common phenomenon in our correctional centers all over the world, with obvious mutations depending on the number of variables. In fact, I've just returned from London, where, amongst others, we're looking at the activities in their own centers and what they are doing to deal with that. The fact that gangs are a common phenomenon does, however, not mean that the effort to counter their activities itself should be considered trivial. To the contrary, we are taking that very seriously. That's where we repeated this issue to Tommy Crocker, as I explained earlier. With respect to the Groenband incident, on the 7th of January 2013, inmates at a section called Project 1 of the Maxima Correctional Center at Groenband staged a riot. The riot started around 2:30 and ended around midnight following tactical intervention led by the South African Police Service. The cause of this riot can be summarized as follows. Injuries to offenders, almost 103 offenders were injured. Injuries to officials, almost 9 officials. Arson, which resulted in a significant damage to the structure of the facility as well as other amenities. Loss of information, where files were banned. Obviously, that also resulted in negative publicity about our ability to respond to such issues. And having done investigations, our view is that the key driver to this incident was that one frustrated offender. This is mainly caused by the perceived indifference of officials. Like when we interacted with offenders, most of their complaints were relayed to specific officials, and the view that these officials do not care about their client. Criminal agenda, where there were clear attempts by certain offenders, and particularly those who belong to gangs, to escape. And obviously they would use any other mechanism, including other grievances which offenders might have. Poor conflict resolution mechanism, overcrowding, and staff complement. I think we are a huge challenge when it comes to overcrowding, particularly in that center and the issue of our shortage of staff. Pillars of security that are weak, personal security, information security, physical security, technology, operational and management supervision. And also our findings were that in that center, gang management strategy was not fully implemented. The progress report. We have completed the investigation on the 12th of March. Various recommendations regarding operational improvement were made. Action against the head of center and the area commissioner has been recommended based on specific findings, re-management deficiencies. While there are other problems, but we were also of the view that there were management deficiencies that were identified. Thus, those officials have since been charged. We might not go into the details of their cases because they must still go through a proper disciplinary hearing. A report, the report on the implementation of the recommendations on operational issues is with the regional commissioner. To date, she has appointed an acting area commissioner who is overseeing the process while the area commissioner is on suspension. With respect to Polmo, we had an incident on the 23rd, 24th and 29th of January, where there was a confrontation in the main between two rival gangs, the 26th and the 28th, the Mountain Drive detainees section. On the 23rd, five offenders were injured and one was seriously injured and rushed to hospital. And the 24th, another five were injured. They were also rushed to hospital. The matter in this instance, as it was viewed as purely gang-related, type of war amongst the gangs, because if you look at those gangs, most of them, it would be gangs that would come from Khayelitsha called Mafara, and those who would come from various areas like Johannesburg Park, the Americans, and so on. So it is a spin-off of gang fights that have been happening in our communities. And when those young people are arrested, then they continue with their gang activity within our centers, which then also in terms of our intervention required a very close collaboration with the South African Police Service so that we should be able to profile them as they come in, so that as they come in, we know that this one comes from this gang in the community, these are the charges against him, and so on. So our intervention, we have increased the random searching, identification of the material used. For instance, most of them would use glass windows, and we are changing those now. They don't break glasses and use those, they would use bed bases. So our workshops, we are sitting with them to look at the type of bed that we need to do to put in our centers now. And so with respect to St. Alban, on the 18th of January, a violence erupted in B unit at St. Alban. The fight was there between members of the 26th gang and the 28th gang. A total of three inmates died as a result of the incident. Progress to date, investigation was finalized on the 3rd of April. Disciplinary action against various officers, including head of security and unit manager for various acts of including poor management of keys, failure to implement gang management strategy fully, in some instances where officials would allow gangs to meet, poor control over movement of offenders, and the matter cases has been referred to the South African Police Service for investigation. So in short, if you look at all these incidences, they speak to the issue around not fully implementing the gang management strategy that we have identified as a gap, and we have since tasked the security officer to visit various regions to look at the issue of the gang management strategy to show its full implementation. But secondly, as I said, we have also improved our interaction with the SAPS such that in most instances now, because of that improved collaboration, we are able to respond within 30 minutes to an hour of an incident happening, so that they should remain ready also. So that as our officials pick up that there could be a riot or something happening, they should escalate that information to management and also to the intelligence community and to the police, so that proper threat analysis could be done and immediate responses to those challenges could be done. I think I should pause and not sure whether that is really good. Okay, Chairperson, I think we should approach the three questions.
Yeah, no problem with the questions. Rabbi, we'll do that. Are you guys aware that Jix actually gave us a call? Are you aware that SIDS gave us a report on affluent specifically? I'm just asking that question. And if any of those observations and findings of SIDS were considered in your presentation, because I understand that SIDS is supposed to be a creation of TCS to assist in those very type of things. So I'm asking the question that if you create this unit or body that does an independent investigation, supply this to us, what value do you add to it if you've not considered it in your report? Before we even open it up, because we must establish the principle that we can't have a situation where you have SIGs just for the sake of SIGs. They report to us. We've received a report with recommendations. Because some of those recommendations that were there, you've not even touched upon, and I'm sure members would have picked those things up. So the question is, why do you have them? If you've not even considered them, I would have expected you at least to say, they are recommending A and we disagree with it. And it's fine. Then we will deal with the agreement, the disagreement, but it's not even in your presentation. It does raise serious questions. One about exactly what you value the work of SIGs to be adding value to you, and secondly, why must we even consider SIGs to be independent or useful if we are looking at it and you're not looking at it? So I have all those types of questions. I just thought I wanted to raise with you before we start. But I'm sure members will pick up other specifics around the SIGs issue and they will be expected to respond to them. Just to remind members, the St. Albans, not the St. Albans, the Devon Westburn, you recall that SIGs came to us and said somebody was killed, an inmate was killed and so on. It might be an oversight on our side that we didn't ask you to report on it. But it was something that was reported to us and we just assumed that you would bring it to us. But Cindy indicates you never asked you specifically about that one. But you know, maybe before we even open up, just give us a broad overview globally. That was what Klaas said initially on the state of gang terrorism or otherwise in DCS and raving about it. We'll open up to members that will ask their specific and so on. Unless you feel that it was covered in the initial review, but if you just give us a broad overview, what is the state of safety or otherwise in DCS?
And maybe before he comes in, if I can just speak about the SIGs issue, just to indicate that as a principle, every time when we get a SIGs report, we look at the report, we acknowledge first, and then we respond to the recommendations they're making. And we do indicate to them that whether we have implemented the recommendation, whether it is implementable and all that. And one of the things the Office of the COO does is to, on a monthly basis, track the progress made with respect to the implementation of the TICS recommendation. So we do take TICS recommendations quite seriously and engage on that. And so I just thought I should just read that as a principle to indicate that where we think we disagree with them, we do set up meetings, formal meetings, and we sit down with them, we engage them, we show them where are the difficulties from our side. But in most instances, I think, every time where they report, where they say finalized, it indicates that we have responded and they are satisfied with our response. But where the issue is still a work in progress, they will report it as such to say that on this level, there's still engagement with either the engagement in their case will either start at the head level of the head of center. Then if they are not happy with the resolution, they escalate it to the area commissioner, then they escalate it to the regional commissioner. But as they engage at head of center and at area level, they continuously copy regional commissioners so that if and when we think we ought to intervene and not wait for the processes, we do intervene. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I thought you said you wanted us to finish in 30 minutes.
No, yeah. That's very important. We just want a broad overview of the state, because members will get into the specifics.
I think, Jefferson, one of the basic underlying admissions that we make when we deal with things is that they are prevalent. That the gangs are a prevalent phenomenon in our correctional facilities. What we focus on, having made this appreciation, is, as you would recall, and during previous reports we said, we've established that mechanism. Now, we have chosen to focus on centers that we have identified as being key in terms of gang activities nationally. And why we have done that is because of the realization that as much as we want to implement the gang management strategy and we implement it fully everywhere, we will only reap benefits if we focus on our problematic areas. So if we solve the top 20 or so sites that we recognize as being drivers of gang activism, then we're going to have a better result than if we try to do a one-size-fits-all type of intervention nationally. That's number one. But I think for the information that you require, it's important to just reflect on hard facts, what we have in terms of inactivities nationally. Now, our analysis of gang-related activities over the 2012-2013 period has showed that most gang incidents occur in KZN and Eastern Cape regions, with housing in Western Cape also being a problem. Why we say that is because of the incidents that we have over that identified period of time, 57% of them have been in KZN. Now, I think the norm is to respond to the issues that probably make the headlines, which is where you have your key incidents happening, like we've had Groenbeek, like we have had St. Albans and so on. But if you look at incidents involving gang activities, the statistics in terms of the report that we have are showing that we have a bigger problem in terms of frequency of incidents in KZN. And actually the lowest incidents that we have suspected gang-related incidents are in the Free State Northern Cape. Contrary to what our perceptions in terms of what the report has been in my show. We have the second highest of that is in the Eastern Cape, which contributes 17.5% in terms of our figures. Now, I need to be very careful when talking about percentages and figures. Remember, in terms of our measurement of incidents, we have started establishing a baseline starting from a specific year, because these incidents were not necessarily measured and reported in the manner that they are being reported now. So our baseline does not go as far back as 5 years or whatever, which would have been ideal. But in terms of information that we can produce and prove, it's showing the figures that I'm giving to you. The third highest is the Western Cape, with 152 incidents that are counted to 16.5%, followed by Gauteng at 5.2% with 48 incidents, and LMN, 20 incidents on record, and Sister Northern Cape. Now, I think, again, it's important that we deal with what is it that we are measuring, what are the figures based on. In terms of what you spoke about just now with the auditors, about what are the indicators and how do we define the indicators, we are talking here about incidents that are reported. Now, you might have, and as it is common, even in the South African public, that you have lots of crimes that are unreported. The same phenomenon manifests itself in our correctional centers. We have incidents that may be reported and incidents that are underreported, and there's always a need to how do we treat them that get not reported and not. So what we're dealing with is a reported on the record figure. I think closely related to that then becomes the issue of it becomes the issue of the incident, the violent incident that has happened, that I think we are paying attention to. As a general overview, we must say, and I think this is based on the understanding that we have 100, over 249 correctional facilities, that overall, our friends that are managing things. But indeed, we are falling short. These gang activities happen, if you look at our trends, happen during specific times. After hours, what most of you would know, where we are most finished in terms of our resources, elsewhere these activities happen. Obviously, we can go into detail about what are the countermeasures that need to be placed. But as a matter of fact, I think we must acknowledge, Chairperson, that we have a challenge with gangs. It is complicated further by the mutation of gangs, now with community gangs becoming a problem. I will make a simple example with a recent visitor made to Project Room, where the head of center says, never mind the 28th and the 26th and 27th. The community gangs that are fighting outside and arrive here in a truck from remand, as remand detainees, and get offloaded once we have processed them and they're in the cells, you all know that they fought yesterday. So yesterday's alliances, today, are not alliances. And that complicates the dynamic. So indeed, as we talk about gangs, we need to separate classically between the prison gangs, the numbers gangs, but we need to factor in as well the additional issue of the evolution of community gangs and how they are influencing that security environment in our centers. So indeed, we have a clear problem, which we are prioritizing. We can talk about what is it that we are doing in more detail as part of our operational plans, and some of it has been disclosed by the leader of our delegation.
Thank you very much. We will open it up to members to put questions. Arnold Mangwenya, everybody wants to speak. Okay, then we will go to Abraham would be number two. South will be three. Then we will come 4, 5, 6 because everybody wants to speak. Just to indicate, I'm not sure we're addressing this to Mr. Klaas, to kick off what members prepare. You know, I find your presentation to be somewhat narrow, because you're talking about gangs as if gangs, outside of your second question, exist only inside. Because nowhere do you talk about the prevalence of cell phones, for instance. Because from inside gangs, as you say, communicating with people outside, you're not saying to us, we've been, as this committee, asking the question for the past 2 years, why is it difficult for DCS to buy and implement jamming mechanisms? Why don't we use technology? Because if you are saying that the gangs inside and outside are one and the same thing, and they're talking every day to each other, why are you guys not putting in cell phone jamming mechanisms? We raised this issue, and nobody's talking about it, because nobody's denying the prevalence of cell phones. And you're not going to win it. That's something your discussion is now. You're not talking to us about the collusion of officials. Because this cell phone goes in because our officials smuggle them in. Drugs get smuggled in. Here, TV walkers, I'm telling you, get smuggled in. In Durban Westville, people are drinking Hennessy. And we get calls at 12 o'clock at night because some of them are our relatives. 12 o'clock at night, no, I'm sitting here with the Hennessy and I'm sitting with the DSTV walker and I'm watching the Liverpool and Arsenal. And all these things can be dealt with if DCS just takes a decision to use technology. And you're not talking about it. That's why I'm saying you're narrowing it to the 26th and the 28th and you're not going to win that fight. I thought you were going to talk about technology. I thought you were going to talk about the human weakness from our own side, our officials. So when you respond, please respond to those things, because I don't think you're going to win it unless you do that. Mangwenya, the floor is yours. You'll pose your 2 or 3 questions, and then number 2 will go. We'll respond, and we'll go to the other people in case there's a follow-up from yourself. Otherwise, everybody, you might lose them. So we'll take Mangwenya, we'll take Abraham, we'll take Sal, you'll respond, and there's a follow-up, and then we'll take the next 3. Mangwenya.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. But what Chairperson, as short as I was thinking when I'm listening, this is the biggest challenge in South Africa, to have an inmate that is owning ourselves, the big challenge. I was expecting that maybe on the presentation here is going to help, they are going to help us say how best is the department going to make this game out or finish in our center. Okay, my first question is on the task team that has been formulated. I want to know that this task team is going to be a task team that is permanent or temporary. I'm asking this question, Chairperson, because this thing of gang, it's a long thing in professional service. And it shows that it was looks like it's not, and it must be there. Maybe that's why now this gangster, they've got even branches even outside. They've got gangs inside and outside, and they communicate with each other. So that's why I want to know about this task team.
Are you
following
the pattern? You know, which task team are you
the task team that has yes. Yes. Because there's a lot that this task team is going to come with to show that this is the long thing. Babu Jones, I'm sure Nangalisa has cut it to apartheid. Let them again, if one of 26 or 28, take over 1994, never done anything about it. So now, Chairperson, another question that I wanted to know. The department after the presentation says after the visiting happened after hours. You remember I used to talk about the master, that we do have the master key. How best can we do which this master key must be nearer? Because all the inmates that are killed, or the members that are killed, all those people chatting, it happened after the murder. And we even proposed chatting the CCTV that we propose it because we feel that we got a belief that if we have those CCTV here, we'll be able to see what is happening in the center at night after the master. Again, Chairperson, prison game and a waiting cry. We have observed when we go to oversight, some centers, you'll find that this site is the inmate that has been arrested already, then they've got their sentence. And the other side are waiting time. They communicate the waiting time and those sentence already. I think that one also care need to be changed. I wanted to know from the department that did they do that? Because we do gave them the recommendation as portfolio committee that this is not a crime. This need to be changed to put the Ama waiting try, Nabandama Mejiwe, LONA1, and Coral. Inmates are very, very clever. It's easy to smuggle. The smuggle even Yeshi, the Bible of Pintis, the Ophelia, and the Amyanguya. Because they're next to other, and they are awaiting trial, they always go out. They go to the court, they come with Dafa, they go to the court, they come with food, they come with everything that is there inside in our center. That means Chairperson, what to use as a strategy in terms of security. Because if the inmate is able to go out to the hospital and come with the smuggler inside, that means our security capacity is not effectively. Something is not made by inside in the cell. It's made outside and come inside. And let us not maybe, Chair, talk about only our staff, our wards. We need to talk again about community outside, their families. Themselves also, they are causing problem in our center. They come with smugglers, and they smuggle with our wards inside there, and that smuggle goes to the fair. So families also, Chelsea, that involves. That it shows that we've got a lot of work as correctional babies to go out there to talk to the community, to talk to the young people, to talk even our police, because they always imply they're taken by the police. They're not taken by our wards. They take about a sub, then they bring them back. So our security care, our security is not tied in our correctional center. We need to take it in that citizen. Yeah, citizen, I'm fine for now.
Yeah, well, not done. Mayor Abraham?
Baitanji, Kwasatar. Chairperson, having taken note of the presentation, which was very short on detail, one needs to ask a question. Not about what happened. The issue here is why. Why does it happen? Why do we have inmates forming themselves into gangs? And there's the old adage, age old adage, an idle mind is the devil's prayer. So there are a variety of interventions that are necessary. We tend to only attend to the symptoms, and we tend not to address the root causes. Chairperson, firstly, we still seem not to have listened when we always talk here about these centers being warehouses, where you are merely parking individuals, as if they are just some other material. We do not look at the requirements of every individual. And there are certain basic things that need to be done here. We always talk about the lack of care. We always talk about the lack of rehabilitative programs. We always talk about life after possibly coming out of these centers, but we are doing precious little to prepare those people for the future. Our chairperson, unless we are prepared to come up with dedicated plans, and I always say, Chair, that if resources are the problem, and I believe they are, human resources, we don't have qualified sociologists, we don't have we do have them, but we don't have sufficient. We don't have enough human material to be able to guide these people. And we don't see anything being said about those things yet. You are not going to be able to stem gang-related activity for as long as you don't create the conditions that are conducive to improving the lot of the people. When you go to these centers, check, you find these forlorn souls. Many of them have resigned themselves to being low bodies. And I have sympathy and empathy for many of the officials at DCS. And it is not a very easy task that you have to deal with people who have been driven to the brink of desperation, desolation. Now, Chairperson, if one looks at this report, and I trust that the team here has looked at it, at Groenpunt, the DICS says most of the complaints of inmates can be traced back to either a shortage of DCS staff or a lack of maintenance from DPW or a combination of both. Now, Chair, when we say the lack of maintenance, let us look at the condition of many of the cells. Are they fit for human habitation? They're far from that, in many instances. And here we have the human material there that can at least do something to make the conditions a bit better, a bit more habitable, and we are not using that human material to do that. We have always pleaded, DHS, that we must work towards self-sufficiency. Self-sufficiency also means, Chairperson, that you create conditions in these centers where those young minds can employ themselves and their time profitably. That's 23 hours behind bars, and all you do is you are allowed to look at television, and you are spending your time whining away, looking at the match and that sort of stuff. Nothing of that is really a person contributing towards the rehabilitation of those people. Now, that person, if one looks at the guilt of some of our officials, yeah, the JICS tells you that the center was not prepared for an emergency, as firefighting equipment is not serviced, and when the electricity failed, standby generator did not start. Trying to douse the fire in the offices from the roof proved ineffective. Now, Chairperson, any institution where you are responsible for the safety of the people that you are supposed to be taking care of, you see that all the systems are operative. Why were they not operative? Have you got a credible explanation for it? You say, I'm coming to the tail end. The HCC, that's what the JICS says, chose to remain in his office as coordinator instead of taking control of the incident at the scene. The AC was apparently not at the scene at all, and the COO had to take control from the HCC when she later arrived. Now, Chairperson, this is absolutely unacceptable. It's a dereliction of duty. My question is, why? Why were these senior people not there? Finally, Chair, what is the department doing about those inmates who have been identified to contribute to the having contributed to the incidents? They have which they have reported today. Are there any measures being taken by the department besides transferring, let's say, the leaders, or call them the ringleaders if you so wish, to Kokstad or anywhere else? Is that going to resolve the problem? My take is no. What DCS needs to do, Jay, and this is what I'm asking them, come with a war plan where you say that these are the interventions that need to be made. And there was no form of repression. History has taught us. No form of repression is going to lead to positive results. You are not going to get them. You need to deal with human beings in a humane manner and try to win over their confidence. And I get the impression, Chair, somewhere here in these reports too, it is said that there were, and I don't say that all officials are guilty of that there were incidents where officials had assaulted inmates. Now, Chairperson, if you give me a smack and I want to give you 2 smacks back, or if I want to punch into your eye and you punch me back, we are both going to be blind in the one eye. We are not going to get the results that we desire. So, Chairperson, DCS needs to go back to the drawing board. It is not going to resolve the gang strategy unless it is going to create the conditions in these places where the conditions are conducive to the training and skilling of those young people, and in that way making them productive inside while they are incarcerated and outside when they want to go out as useful citizens. That is my plea there, that we need a war plan from the department, and we don't get that. We seem to be lurking from one crisis to the other. And this Chairperson is becoming endemic. And unfortunately, Chair, for example, they say that they could not get to the center in time, especially at Krumpen, because of the bad roads. We were there. We saw that the roads were bad. Nowhere did it say yet that the department had approached the relevant authorities, because they cannot repair provincial roads. The relevant authorities, it's a key point, eh? And if the entry to the key point is placed in jeopardy because the roads are in bad shape, what are you doing as officials, as senior people level of those centers, as perhaps the commissioner of the department, to liaise with the relevant departments to see that they report the repair those roads? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. You and other colleagues have raised some of the issues that I would have wanted to do, but I really want to focus on the Krimpant incident for the reason that the investigation has been finalised, and according to the presentation that we saw today, it says that various recommendations regarding operational improvements were made. Now, they're very interesting. I would very much like to know what those various recommendations are, and I think it helps our understanding very much to have an overhead that says various recommendations regarding operational improvements were made without telling us what those recommendations are. I don't like it that the department comes here and produces a superficial overhead presentation without going drilling down into those specifics. Now, not only did the JICS produce a report, we produced a report. And we made several recommendations, which I also thought that the department would come here to talk about. For example, it says in our report, the portfolio committee should also be provided with a detailed account of the ESPs deployed at the centre, attempting to manage the situation, the procedures they followed, and to what extent they complied with the legal provisions regarding governing their activities. Presentation silent on that, absolutely silent. The report also refers, and other people have done, to critical staff shortages in the correctional centre, which the inspecting judge referred to in his report as a ticking time bomb. No reference here in this presentation. We also made reference to the alleged death at the hands of correctional officials of an offender on the 16th of January. Now, did an offender die or didn't an offender die? And if so, where is it in the report? But most critically, it is said here that there is a report that's now being produced and that the implementation of the recommendations are being considered by the Regional Commissioner. Now, if you recollect, Chair, there was also a incident in Harrismith a couple of years ago where 42 people escaped, I think. And there was a report and a recommendation made on that incident. My information is that those recommendations have not been implemented 2 years on. So the question I really want to know is, what happens to a report and recommendations that are then produced? What happens to the JICS report? What happens to the Portfolio Committee's report? Is it just sort of stored in some file somewhere for reference at a future date? Or do people take action related to these things so that it doesn't happen again? Thank you, Chair.
I thought I was going to stop there. Maybe I should take Max, Ngubeni, Kwele, and Palisho for opening comments as anybody else has done. And then let's see where we take it from there. Mr. Max.
Thank you, Chair. As you can remember, this is one of the issues which I was very head on when I actually come to this committee. What I have heard here is astonishing. It's an air shell. There's nothing inside. And I'm very astounded of Mr. Klaas's view about the capacity or the legality of gathering intelligence. And that means to me that either he don't understand what intelligence is or what is the function of collecting information, maybe new in the department that was not exposed to this particular operational functions. But what was understand, although you got EST unit, and I assume that each center of region or area within at least an area, an EST unit. Now an EST unit is a reactive tool, whereas that in most instances to address, contain and normalize a situation. But in any approach, there's a proactive and a reactive approach. The proactive approach is like in any commission of a crime, there are two factors always present. And that is the desire and the opportunity. No crime will be committed with the absence of one of those factors. And in Afrikaans, they call it the philosophy. These are Afrikaans. Now, I just want to ask, given the intelligence problem, the intelligence you need for this to deal with gangsterism, and, you know, I'm a believer in miracles, and I also believe that miracles never cease, but gangsterism is one of those things which I doubt whether there will be a miracle to eradicate gangsterism in totality. The best, and that is what my personal experience. As a student constable, the gangs chased me on a Friday evening. Mm-hmm. I fought them for 27 years. They became more sophisticated. With taking consideration your social circumstances outside, which is being transferred into jails and manifest themselves in jails. Now the best we can do is to manage. You won't be able. The person who tells me that you will eradicate gangsterism in this world is still to be born. But the best thing that you can do is to manage this and to minimize the violent aspect of gangsterism within society and in our centers. And to enable you to do so, Mr. Clark, is that you must have officials trained how to collect information. Your officials should be trained by institutions to know how to interrogate, how to consult, how to recruit informants amongst the gangs with an incentive. Because those corrupt officials is not by accident corrupt. They have been recruited by the gangs. Let me tell you. And let I challenge anyone in the Africa to disagree with me. I know what I'm talking about. I was an expert in this thing. Let me tell you that the best we can do as correctional service to be proactive, to minimize and to manage these things, is that we've got out, because each and every official, each and every inmate is a source of intelligence. And you have to elicit those intelligence in ways which is legal and within a particular strategy. So it will enable management to put the relevant and the necessary action steps into place to oppress or to manage a particular situation. So, in 2010, when I asked in this committee about the gang strategy, it was mentioned in the following year's operational strategy, the APP, the formation of this gang. And then the follow-up was the implementation. Well, I think you people were so bored with me, but every time I was referring to that thing. And it was said the last time that this thing is now in operation. Now, here we've got two incidents where it was blatantly, unequivocally stated that those policies and strategies were not complied with, which is a serious, serious dereliction of duty. So somebody have to take responsibility. Somebody have to be charged departmentally for not complying with those strategies which relates or as a result led to the death or inmate and injured or whatever the case may be. So, lastly, Chairperson, I just want to ask from the leader of this delegation, Mr. Klaas, what is the status? Do your people consider the training of officials? It should be actually in your curriculum of any official at your basic training colleges, because you work with a potential source of information within your centers. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Chairperson, and also thanks for the presentation by the officials. But really, I concur with my colleagues that the presenter decided to be very economic with information when compiling this report. Because a lot of things are not said here. We are just brushing us with a paintbrush. For instance, when talking about cause drivers or key drivers, they are indicating that often they are frustrated, don't indicate why they were frustrated, whereas the GIST report clearly indicates that they were supposed to have a match that particular morning. And the officials decided to have a meeting before opening them so that they can go and beg their match. And that was done later. That caused the frustration. That was the cause of the riots. But it's not indicated here as the cause of the riots. So you don't even indicate what happened to those particular officials who are supposed to be to open for these offenders to go and play that match, because this match was very important to them. You don't say anything. And when indicating all the cost drivers, the security that is weak, you are not indicating how you have addressed those issues. You only say various recommendations regarding operational improvements were made. One specific, one details. How are you going to address the personal security? They've already done that. Information security, they've already done that. Physical security. What all those things that after that incident, have you addressed these things? If they are not addressed, what is happening currently? I understand that the head of the center and the area commissioners were suspended. But you don't hear anything about the officials that were involved. Because it is said one inmate died, two were reported seriously injured, and they were hospitalized. But they're not saying anything about the officials, whether they were suspended or they were disciplinary hearing against them. There's nothing that is said. And the head of the center denied that there was a videotape. He said the bedroom fled. But according to this report, the incident was videotaped from the roof. Did you find that tape? Did you find that? Because that's why you're going to get who were involved in the riot, who were responsible for assaulting the inmates. What's that information? The information that you're giving us is very, very scant. It's also reported that when inmates were transferred to Embongweni, 197 were transferred, but it was later discovered that even those who were not involved in the riot were transferred. Why was it so? Has that matter been resolved? Did you leave them there, or were they returned back to Prince Ben? I will end it.
Thank you, Ma. Mama Sarah.
Thanks. I'm partly covered by Honorable Mugwe. I heard Mr. Dustin that there were injuries to offenders and officials. Then he mentioned the number of officials that were injured. I didn't say that there were nine, if I'm not mistaken. But you didn't say anything about the inmates, how many were there that they were in there. You only talked about the official. Why is he doing that? And the issue of the candidate has been not fully implemented. Would that be the reason why it's not fully implemented? Because whoever is responsible should be charged for it. Thanks, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Nguzeni has partly covered me. The question that I want to add to what she was asking about the inmates that were transferred to Ebombe, I want to know to the leader of delegation, are the officials sober when they are doing this thing? And this tells us about the records that you are having in your books, if you are able to transfer people that are not involved in gang violence. I think cancerism is very, very serious in this area, and you are not addressing it. We are not going to sit about around the bush about that. You are doing nothing. It's not that it is not implementing, but you people are doing nothing about this. There were recommendations, as the chairperson has stated. We recommended to management in Pretoria 2 years back. We recommended as his portfolio, please put cameras at Kalanga. Dallas is NITV TV. So that we can be able to see what is happening when there is locals, because there are not enough officers. And that's why you are sitting with 777 inmates and 4 officers. It's inhuman also for the officers. So there are both sides that management is not addressing. This side, you don't have officials, enough officials, because they are human beings, make no mistake. They must be addicted, very aggressive people. They must educate them. They must look after them. They must look that they must go to work so that they cannot sit, as Ubaba Adam has said, 23 hours in cell, lockout. That's why they are... And it's later, man. They're going to remember each other. So, the problem is both sides. When can you got these people that are not rehabilitated? Besides, you don't have officers. Why are you people not addressing the question of officers? Because we will talk until we are blue in our faces, indicating the very same thing, like a long play record, recording, telling you one thing over and over and over again. We have not met. Our heads, we are sober. You are not addressing what Jake is recommending. You are not addressing what the portfolio committee is recommending. We give you good advice. We are not just criticizing you. We do give you advice what to do, what steps to take. We even give you information about the relevant infrastructure to use, because they are making weapons out of some of equipment. We do give you advice what to do. Chapter 10. The other thing that he says is not addressing is a prolonged investigation. One thing is catching another thing. One thing is catching up with another thing, because the first investigation is prolonged. You don't know why. And the question of officials that are investigated being in that very same center, doing the very same work, how are you going to get an answer or resolve the issue if those people are not transferred to another center to go and work there, so that they cannot interfere here with the investigation? That's also a question mark of management. Weak management.
Yeah, thank you very much. I halfway through, and I hope members would bear with me, halfway through I realized that maybe we should allow all members to just speak as they did, because clearly to have a normal oversight session was not going to help because of the amount of tests that were identified by the members. So that we turn it into some sort of a workshop, or at least give you an idea that what is required is a workshop. Because members have got lots of suggestions and ideas. And I want to suggest, Mr. Clark, that to go back to your leadership. Have you had a Imbizo or an Indaba on overcrowding? I think we need to have an Indaba on, as Mr. Maxwell was saying, the management of gangsterism. Not eradication, but the management of it. I'm not sure how Nicock is going to do this thing without the benefit of the wisdom that we have here. So I allow members to speak freely and openly, because I don't think members, quite honestly, that we should even expect any sort of response or something, other than to suggest that we need some sort of a symposium on this matter. Because the kind of things that came out, let me just remind you, and I'm suggesting to you, Mr. Class, that we're hoping that you are going to initiate it. If you can't, let us know. But when you initiate this symposium, one of the source documents is going to be our report on Krumpen, as an example, because it covers many of the areas. Another source document can be the TICS report, because it also details quite deliberately who did what, who didn't do what, and so on. And of course, your own reports. I think we need to have a symposium. The type of things that came out from this, that I picked up and the other you picked up the others, was really what is the mandate goal and what is the expected outcome of this NEPCOC task team. Because Max is suggesting that intelligence gathering starts inside and not outside. So let us, when we have this in doubt, understand what is it that we're hoping for NEPCOC to do. Mamgwenya Kalmardan asked the question around the fact that we've continuously said after the lockup is the problem, both in terms of access in there, we want to physically get in there because the key's not there, but more importantly, the use of technology. Because we, even if we had the key Mamgwenya, when you are 10 and there's 700 of them, we'll get an answer. So it's not about the key, it's about management after hours. The use of technology, not just to see what's happening, but we are firmly of the view that you must stop the use of cell phones in there. And I'll tell you why you don't want to stop it, Mr. Clark. If we put if it jams the cell phones there, it means you guys can't use your cell phones there. And that is the resistance. That is the resistance. It's not the officials, it's you that are saying, no, if they put it, that means I can't use the cell phone, why not? And I'm suggesting that we must have that discussion. We won the war, I think, around CCTV cameras. You know, this argument of human rights and so on, I thought we'd won that war. Mm-hmm. The resistance comes from officials. And that's what I'm saying, we must have that discussion. And I'm not saying you, but I'm saying certainly, it's not because of a lack of money. It's because of a lack of work. That's what I think the problem is. It's a lack of work for the use of technology. And then, of course, it's going to answer Baba Abraham's question in the first place, why banks? And we've also given you answers. It's because they're idle. It's because they watch the bold and the beautiful instead of working. But we'll answer those questions why in the symposium. Of course, everybody has raised the specific case of why was the HCC or the AC not there and Jolingana to take over. Just the lack of leadership in these areas. Why must the COO come and do something when we've got area commissioners and regional commissioners? So we have to talk about, and I think it touches on the area of the vacancies. It talks on the areas on sufficient training and those type of things. So these are the things that have come out, and members are saying just in your report. And of course, members have very upset that we said, can we do recommendations after we've gone through oversight? The intention of oversight is for us to go and observe, come back, say this is our observation, give it to you so that you either implement it or at least come back to us and say to us, we don't agree with your recommendations. Because we might be wrong, but somebody must come back and say, you know, all your recommendations, not. We don't accept any of them because you don't have the technical know-how. But just to ignore it. Frustrated, as you can see. It's really frustrated that we do a report and it's not worth the papers, it's not. Whether it's us or six and so on. So in other words, we're going to have to discuss there, when we as a team come up with solutions, how do we ensure that those solutions are either implementable or at least fine-tuned? And we can have that discussion. We've spoken about the EST, I suppose that's all part of intelligence gathering and training and so on. Of course, I spoke about it earlier, but Mr. Max raised it again about maybe we need to, when that NEPCOC is there, to understand. Because I was also very worried when you said to us that you are no longer going to get involved with gangs because it's going to be a NEPCOC exercise. And I thought, are we moving back to just warehousing people? I mean, that was my initial concern when we said that, look, this thing is too big for us. But let's have a discussion around. Because Mamgwenya will always give you a story in the bad old days how those that were in charge used us to spy on each other. Inside. We spied on each other. Why can't you guys do that type of thing today? It's known, Gunamut. How these guys operated in the past. Now today we say, it's not our job, it's NEPCOC's job. Intelligence in this country, for starters, we've been asking them to better our people. They are overworked. We're talking about the estate or whatever. We just know that they are overworked. Now we say, let them come and resolve our problems. Must have been not serious. So let's have that discussion. And of course, the question that many members are asking, what is the consequences of lack of performance? What is the consequence of lack of performance? Somebody used the word dereliction of duty. There's procedures to be followed, compliance is not, or policy is not complied with. Nobody has said to us, "Putin, this is what happened to that guy." So I'm saying that is part of the gap that we're talking about. And of course, the well-being of inmates. Somebody asked the question, how many inmates were injured? But I think broadly, the well-being of inmates and the well-being of officials. When you have two officials against 700, are we serious as we sit here about the well-being of our inmates and the well-being of our staff? And finally, what members have raised is also when I talk about the consequences of performance, also the prolonged investigation. So that, in part, is because we don't want to suspend Cindy. We just keep the investigation going on for years and years. Hopefully at one day Cindy will get to her age of 60 and retire before she's found guilty or otherwise. So this whole, what is the consequence of lack of performance? I think we must have this discussion. I mean, those are the type of things that members have raised here. As gaps that were in your report, I don't even want you to respond to them because I don't think it's going to be useful. My suggestion, and members must indicate if they feel otherwise, would be foster some sort of a post-parade or roundtable with all stakeholders to discuss this matter. As partners, none of us are here as watchdogs, certainly on matters of correctional services, because it's a societal problem, I'm going to correct. Civil society must come on board, so we want to be your partners as opposed to your watchdogs. Let's have it done on how do we manage this curse of gangsterism inside ourselves. So much more important because it now goes beyond our walls. To manage gangsterism, we have to deal with those inside and we have to deal with those in Mitchell's Plain as well. Because to deal only with them in Portmore and leave the ones in Mitchell's Plain, you're not going to deal with them. Mm-hmm. So really it's become broader and bigger than us. So I'm hoping members are in agreement that we close it at this point and hopefully amongst ourselves find a way of having a one-day breakaway session somewhere to deal with this matter. Before I allow you guys your closing argument, I just want to get an indication if you are satisfied with that approach or do you want them to respond, because I think responding is going to be a waste of time.
Just a suggestion.
After you and then Palito and then leadership will allow you guys to have your closing remarks, whatever they are, your closing remarks, and see if we take it from there.
Jefferson, the department, as well as civil society organizations here, are aware of the sentiments. What I expect at such a post-production is not us going there and repeating whatever we've done today. What I expect is that the department will now seriously look at the sentiments that have been expressed here and then prepare some or other papers, some other documents for discussion so that we can make the way further forward. Otherwise, we'll have another Bosberat, we'll blow up the same scheme, and which we have done over the last 3-4 years, and there will be no result. That will get us nowhere, Chair. That Bosberat must be one that starts mapping the way forward, and not planning the way forward. It must then start making check. Thank you.
Yes, Chairperson, I want to agree that that farmers must give us an implementation plan and progress. The one progress I'm really concerned of, whether we like it or not, is the staff complaint. That one needs to be addressed and it needs to be addressed very fast. We will be also guilty, Chairperson, with human rights of officials. The Bill of Rights also gives them the right to have rights, as well as inmates. Rights, they do have rights, although they have wrong society. But the staff will also have rights in terms of the Bill of Rights. So really, they must bring us a progress report of how many did they implement the staff complaint. 100%? And how far are they addressing that 2x12 shift of 2x1 shift they had in the DCS? Because I'm tired of that 2x12 shift. Because we are also straining our officials, and that's why they are rehabilitating the inmates. Because they need self-rehabilitation, they let themselves know that. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
but your suggestion is that there can't be any responses now. There are not responses because it will be the same responses that we have every week. Thanks.
Over to this year. Everybody,
Siva. Yeah, no, we have noted the recommendation regarding a bus barrier. In fact, as I was talking to the chief security officer, we were saying that in fact that practice in our plans to have such a session. Because naturally, in a session like this, one might not give a detailed paper account of each and every area or aspect of the issues that have been raised. But we can be able to comment on each of those, the impact of cell phones and all of those things and what are the challenges. So I'm saying that maybe those are things which we could add. We have noted them and aggregated them, and maybe we could take them into that hospital and engage in much more difficulties. But secondly, the issue of staffing, I think when we, the minister did indicate that established a team, that is looking at all HR challenges, that includes the shift system, all of these issues. The team between ourselves and labor and so on. So that team is still working. It will give a report to the minister, who will give a report to the application. I think during the budget meeting, the minister will speak to this issue, so I would want to go into that issue. The third thing, the issue around consequences for particular action. I think in the presentation, I did indicate specifically that there is a particular action taken against the official. Safe to say, because the hearing is underway, I cannot go into the details of...
No, Mr. Clark, let's help you. This thing happened on the 7th of January. We are now on the 7th of May.
Mm.
You can't come to us on the 7th of May and say you are still going through the process. You know, if memory serves me correctly, public servants or certainly Minister Lindiwe's department says these things must finish in 60 days. You come into us, you bring it to us after 90 days and you expect us to accept it. We can't comply with things that are not correct. We cannot comply with things that are not correct. If you are within 60 days, you will come to me and say, Chair, it's within 60 days. You've already broken that first one. And you come in to say, no, but we did say to you, we are busy with it. We don't accept because you've already broken the 60-day rule. End of the story. Now, why you broken it and those type of things are matters that we can discuss in the postpartum. Union delegates or people get sick or people change layers, but the law says within 60 days.
Or dying.
If our people are going beyond those 60 days, let's have that in the boss bar. That's what I'm saying to you. Don't even try to justify it. Let's have these discussions in the boss bar. Because once I allow you to continue, I'm telling you these people will rip open every point that you make by the rules. I suggest we defy.
Yes,
can I to say something? Or whoever?
I just wanted to correct something. The first issue that NICOG is an interdepartmental issue looking at the stress posed by gangs as a holistic phenomenon. They will look at prison gangs and other gangs. So it is not about whether we are handing over that responsibility. There are functions. As NICOG is a threat assessment on matters that pose or may pose a threat to national security, we are part of that cluster and so we apply to act in that cluster. That's one.
Okay.
The second issue, I think it's important not to anecdotally dismiss the issue of cell phones. It is an ICASA decision on record that no law enforcement agency in South Africa, including the police, may use jamming devices. It is not whether or not DCF wants it or not. I mean, it's one of the issues, but I think it is fair here to be very clear on what the facts are. Indeed, we're exploring with JPS what are the other alternatives that may be taken on board, but I would not want to leave this meeting here with false impressions about things that are beyond our control. And those two for me. Indeed, if there's a need to engage ICASA, that process is being initiated. But as we stand here, the deployment of jamming devices by law enforcement agencies is illegal.
Oh, now I understand.
Thank you very much, but this is what discussion must approach us. Because you see, we make the law, by the way.
Yeah.
We make the law. If ICASA can't give us an alternative to this serious problem, surely we should be able to debate it with the minister, whatever the case may be. So it's useful if you are bringing it to our attention, but up to now it has never come to our attention. We thought you just didn't like the idea. Now we know that there's a legal impediment, we'll have to decide what to see Vule Raja. But it's useful. And I think these type of things will come out in the fourth class. Where you'll have something to do, we'll have something to do, civil society will have something to do, and we as a team go and fix up this problem. But thank you very much. I want to close. I thought it was useful. It was not hostile. It was, I think, very constructive. Mabadovu, you met a very interesting meeting.
I understand.
You have enjoyed it. So thank you very much. Mr. Klaas, can you leave it in your hands? I mean, you'll go back and indicate that Parliament...
I understand some of it.
...is suggesting that we have this type of... for all our sake. And then we'll hear from you guys. Okay. It might not happen this term because you couldn't budget, but certainly this term and so on. Also, certainly we'll be able to accommodate us one day. Let's just go and have a sit down. But we'll leave you to do that for us. So thank you very much, members. We have minutes that... Do we have 9 people?
Yes.
Can we say more to our friend about... Do we have 9? No, Abraham and Rohu, literally 2 minutes, let's set up the minutes. Yourself, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. And lucky with the girl you guys were.
And we have proven it, because the Senapunta itself comes from India. It comes from that. That's the lyric. That's the lyric. Ask the baby. She will tell you. Ask her. Ask her. She will be going out there. Why men and women have to pay the gallo over the kuno?
Came for the Quran for the minister.
No, I didn't come for the minister. I don't care about him. I care about this.
Very briefly, our colleagues from PMG and other media, just 2 seconds, please. We literally want 2 seconds. Let's not make an announcement to happen. What should it be? The 8th of April meeting was cancelled. Yes. You got it, please? Or not on page 2 of the summary. You got it. You can use that one. Yeah. Okay, any other changes on page number 3? Somebody to move adoption of the minutes? Thank you, Mr. Charles. Seconded. We got the says on summary of outcomes on page 2, the fourth bullet point, it's got TE 18th of April, it should be there. Have we got it? All right. 29th of April, ladies and gentlemen. 24th of April at 09:30.
Why are you talking about 29th?
Because I see the line at the bottom. 24th at 09:30. And what glasses we should have, by the way. I'll wear them next week. No, I've got them already next week. Room 1 is 120, page 3. Any changes on page number 1?
Yeah,
yes, sir.
I said that my phone is
adopted.
Yeah.
Okay. Is it at the back? It's on page 2. Oh. That's right. Other than that, the other, page 2? Page 3? Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. Page 7. Page 8. Page 9. Page 10. Page 11. Page 12. Page 13. Page 14. H2D. Anybody to move? Thank you very much. Second, Abraham and Guveni, thank you very much. So before we finish the session, members probably are aware that a decision was taken that there will be certain budget debates that they now classify as plenary. Those are the APEC committees, education and those. Normally held in all assembly or 249, but they're held in the chamber. On the day of those plenaries, no committee was set. Any committees, no committees were set. It affects up on the 15th and on the 29th. So our meetings of the 15th and the 29th, we're not going to have them. But whatever was going to be happening on the 15th, we moved to the 22nd. Everything beyond the 29th, we should be back in business.
I think the 15th was that very important meeting, which a whole lot of feedback was going
to happen. Moving into the 22nd, on the 10th.
Which field are we talking about?
From all about the information technology and all that stuff.
No, that's only said 5th of June. Remember speaking in the 29th last week meeting, 5th of June. Does that mean the 5th of June?
Yes. No.
Okay, fine. We are doing it on the 1st of June.
Because on page 7 of the minutes.
Of today's
minutes. Today's, the minutes we just
created. Yes, that's what I'm saying.
It says, the briefing would be accepted during the meeting originally scheduled for the 15th of May. Now, I was under the impression we were meeting on the 15th of May to deal with this matter.
Could
you
say subsequent to that?
So the program's changed?
No, the parliamentary program changed, and of course our program
Okay, well as long as it happens.
No, it's going to happen on the 5th of June, according to you, and it's been approved. It's on the new program, and it's been approved. Okay. So it's going to happen. Thank you very much. It means that we only now meet on the 22nd. We don't have a meeting next week because we need it. We meet on the 22nd as a committee. Oh. And that one will be the big quarterly. Alright. Thank you very much. Members, you are all welcome to stay for this meeting if you want to. And if you've got something else, fine. So I don't think it will be very long. We've invited people. Nobody's been chased away, but we wanted as many of us as possible. So if everybody wants to stay, you're more than welcome.
Although closed,
okay. So I've been closed, but if you want to, I'm not saying before members, if they want to stay, they're welcome, but if you want to leave, please do so now. I'm sure those people are somewhere around.
Our one
question
is, where are they going to allow us to apply again for our
overseas? I don't think it will happen before 2014.